Jeff Norman, the Norman Report.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Norman Report. Jeff Norman, and tonight we're going to talk about police misconduct and police conduct. It's not all misconduct, but we're going to get at it in two different ways. A little later in the show, Jessica Burke, a police watchdog based in New York City, will join us on the phone. And here in the studio tonight are two kindred spirits. These guys are maniacs in the same way or in a similar way that I am. They're passionate about traffic laws, the motor vehicle code, parking laws, the way it's enforced, what those laws are, the whole policy behind it. They have founded the Los Angeles Parking Freedom Initiative. It's a citizen movement to reform parking policy and enforcement in the city of Los Angeles. Welcome, Jay Bieber. Welcome, Stephen Vincent. I don't trust anybody with two first names, by the way.
Oh, well, I guess.
Well, you can trust Stephen.
All right.
And I'll vouch for him. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay, good.
Oh, all wait right. A minute. You've got two first names.
Exactly. I was hoping you'd get that. I
kind of like Ron Paul.
Yeah. Sirhan.
Uh-oh.
That's the same first name.
You're right. So you guys, I say you're maniacs, and frankly, I mean it. No, what's behind the passion here? Now, I know, Jay, you are known as the guy who got rid of camera lights in the city of Los Angeles.
Yeah, the red light cameras in the city of Los Angeles. Yeah.
And is that how you first established your cred as a kind of a parking guru?
Yes.
Traffic guru.
Exactly. That's exactly true. I mean, the LA Weekly called me LA's newest folk hero when that happens. I was like, oh, look, I'm a folk hero. That was one of the things. I actually had no real interest in probably most of this until that happened. And I just sort of doing some research on red light cameras and what was going on. I saw a news report. And then I heard, from the police department and from the Department of Transportation, City of Los Angeles, and they were saying things to the city council that just simply were not true. And I was waiting for somebody to get up and tell the true story, and it didn't happen. So I was like, somebody has to do that. And what do I know? So I just started contacting people, and it kind of snowballed into kind of almost a full-time thing after a while. And then eventually the police commission sided with me. They had been 100% in favor of the program. And in about 4 or 5 months, I convinced them that it was not worth going forward with it. And they voted to end the program.
And the chicks won't leave you alone.
It is exactly why I did it.
Now, a lot of people who are activists, watchdogs, whatever word you want to use, tend to get involved in different issues, different aspects of the same issue. What's the scope of your involvement? What else do city officials have to worry about besides laws and parking when it comes to dealing with Mr. Jay Bieber?
Well, they have to be reasonable and smart, so they have to actually worry about everything. But I've weighed in on a lot of things having to do with traffic laws and the way that the citizens are treated. I'm on my neighborhood council. I'm on the second vice president of my neighborhood council in Sherman Oaks. And it's one of these things where you have to keep a watch out on what the city government is doing, because unfortunately, not all the time are they doing, the people's work. They're just kind of doing their own work. And pretty much what I look for are things that actually affect people's lives every day. And a lot of that is people's interaction with, the police department on kind of silly little things like a camera ticket or, whether they're giving tickets for people crossing the street when the countdown, after the countdown timer starts, and, hundreds of dollars tickets for nonsense. I mean, it's silly stuff. But it affects everybody's life. And parking is another one of the things. You think about parking and it's like, oh, it's kind of a silly issue, but it affects so many people. And it, to some extent, can really ruin somebody's, life or their ability to make a living if their car gets taken away because they got too many parking tickets.
Yeah, I mean, they say don't sweat the small stuff. But on the other hand, you don't necessarily have to get all stressed out about it to think about it. I used to teach comedy traffic school, and it really generated what for me was a lot of interest in conversations. It just kind of made you think about what's fair, what's not. Life is about conflict, Right. It really is. I mean, it's not the only thing it's about, but a big part of the human
experience. It's about love and conflict.
Yeah, right. So therefore, life is about how you resolve conflicts. And that's what driving is all about. You're constantly having to stop when you don't want to stop. You want to go this way or go that way. And how do you deal with this, you know? And what does it say about you, you know, in terms of how you handle it?
Well, the city really ought to be...
Did we say it was time for you to talk yet? I don't remember saying that.
Too
Let's
bad.
Bring Steve in.
You know, I mean, basically, you know, I do what I want when I want, so get used to it.
All right. Yeah. We're here, we're queer, get used to it.
All right. So anyway, you know, I mean, the city, you know, needs to be about facilitating people's movement around from one place to another, not getting in the way. You know, right now, a crucial part of any trip is finding a place to put the damn car.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can't do that safely, securely, and without having to worry about getting an egregiously high parking fine, there's a problem. You know, this is preventing people from interacting and transacting, which is the essence of what a city is.
Right. It's supposed to be just high enough to be a deterrent.
Exactly. You know, we say...
Now, let me ask you a question about that. We say supposed to... Mm-hmm. This is really something I don't even know. I'd really like to know the answer to this. When we say it's supposed to be, are we saying what our philosophical preferences, or has the legislature, or in this case, I guess it would be the city council who set the laws,
best practice in municipal parking is that a fine should be sufficient to incentivize compliance. You know, and it shouldn't. Right now, we have fines that are as high as they can set them without having people rioting in the streets.
Right, storming City Hall.
You know, yeah. You know, and, you know, and basically, you know, they would put them as high as they can because they feel like they have the right to take money out of people's pockets in order to fund the city government's activities.
If they could make them $150...
They kept raising them until people basically
started
got to the point where say no, you know, yeah. say no, and we're there, because people are saying no through us. They're saying no.
And all right, but the city needs the money. They're addicted to the money. They're lusting for these fines, and you guys have an argument. You're saying that you can present a new policy that actually will increase revenue. While bringing down the fine.
Sure.
Are you a magician or are you crazy or what?
Well,
is that real?
If you take parking revenue and intelligently invest it in new parking supply that increases property values, that increases sales tax, that increases business tax, and also fees to whatever new facilities that you build, you're increasing revenue. So over time, you can replace anything that's lost, you know, in terms of parking fine revenue with tax revenue from economic activity.
All right, and what about the neighborhood we're in right now? You talk about increasing taxes. If more people came downtown, they'd buy more stuff, mm-hmm. and the city would make more money.
In sales tax and business tax.
Right. So what's the story on that? Why do I see municipal parking lots in ritzy Beverly Hills, free or at a relatively low rate, in ritzy Santa Monica, but you come downtown to Los Angeles and it costs like $8 every 20 seconds? Mm-hmm. What's up with that?
Well, I think the economics are different, you know, according to, you know, wherever you are I'm sure it's very different in Beverly Hills, where they can get away with giving away 2 hours of free parking. But, you know, you could conceivably have a structure where 2 hour free or an hour free parking is offered through validation, you know, and then the businesses in the area choose to pay into that program. So they're paying for the validation to give you, the customer, that 1 hour free parking so that you'll come to your business and spend money.
Now, you're a financial analyst in real life. This is real
market
life.
Market analyst, oh, yeah, market. Yeah.
Okay, because, I'm not going to claim that I've...
Stock market is not real, by the way. I mean, it's pretty much all a figment, but, you know.
All right. I'm not sure what is real, but if you have any guidelines at any point, let me know. So what I'm trying to say is I don't claim to have done any figuring here.
Right.
It just seems like common sense that if you can go to other parts of the city to do similar things, buy similar products, do whatever, without having to pay to park, you'll do it.
So that's exactly true.
I haven't even heard the downtown merchants screaming about this. Is it not even a controversy, or I'm just not listening? You guys know?
Well, I mean, we're hearing it from them. I mean, I have somebody who actually lives in my neighborhood, but he has a business downtown, and he's screaming about it because he has no place to unload his truck. I mean, and he's getting tickets left and right. People are not coming to his business. I mean, it's,
yeah.
I mean, these are the kinds of things that people, when they make a decision as to what city they want to locate their business in, they take these things into account.
Yeah.
You know, people have a choice to some extent, and they're going to go elsewhere unless you make it easy for them to have a business, and unless you make it easy for their customers to get to them.
Now, in San Pedro, which is a part of the city of Los Angeles, the merchants haven't been doing too well for the last few years. Right. And they said, hey, give us a break. Get rid of these parking meters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you know what the city did? They said, okay.
Yep.
They yanked the parking meters right out of there, and it's free parking.
Right. And they had the help of their city councilman to do that. And partially it's because there were other options for people. And they were saying, you know, people are going to go where it's most convenient, where it's easiest, where the cost is not much, whether it's, you know, free or whether it's a buck or two. But once you start getting into $8, $9, $10 to park and then go shop, people are not going to do that. They're just not going to.
And this, all of this needs to be factored in and considered in any commercial district or residential district as well. It needs to, parking is well managed parking is a service that the city should be providing to the businesses and the residents of the city. Right now, we don't really have that. We basically have a revenue collection system. That's what passes for parking management in Los Angeles. You know, a system by which a lot of people say that the situations that result in a lot of tickets are that way intentionally. You know, that it's difficult to park in some areas and you run the risk of tickets in a lot of areas. And they're at least happy to leave it that way because it results in more revenue for the city.
Yeah,
that's not managing parking. That's collecting money.
That's true. And there's an analogy to the red light cameras, which is a very interesting analogy, which is that in places where they were generating a lot of tickets, that means that there was an engineering problem at that intersection. It was something they could fix, but they were more than happy. And there are plenty of cities that still do this, like Beverly Hills, where they're more than happy to keep churning those tickets. Yeah, they won't fix the problem.
Wasn't there an issue about the yellow lights being?
That's exactly sure? Yes, yeah. Exactly. And there's still an issue with that. And I've actually gotten that changed for the entire state. And that's coming out in next month. So.
You're single-handedly making everyone in California go bankrupt.
Well, no, I'm helping all the citizens. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
So we've been
60,000 people were getting tickets every year in the city of Los Angeles that are not getting tickets right now for red light camera tickets.
Well, you really are a hero in the making if this revenue thing works out as you say it will. Now we've talked so far about what's good policy, but that's not the only rap against our wonderful city. The other part of it is that they've been acting unlawfully. And you guys aren't the only ones breathing down their necks. There's a lawsuit pending, and it looks like it's going to be certified as a class action lawsuit that focuses on a lot of illegal aspects in terms of how parking laws are enforced. And somebody else just filed a lawsuit and got a judge to rule that the Xerox Corporation,
right,
which is in charge of issuing these tickets, has been making decisions in the first step when you contest a parking ticket. And a judge says, no, you can't have some private corporation making this decision. You, the city of Los Angeles, right, has to make
it. The law actually says that the issuing agency, which is the city of Los Angeles or the Department of Transportation of the city of Los Angeles, has to do the review. That's the way the law is written. So it doesn't say you can farm that out to somebody. So that's really what the issue is whether you can farm that small portion out to a private company to do that review, especially a company which is also doing the processing of the tickets and all of those things, and who gets more money if you don't pay your ticket later on and it goes to collections and they have to collect more. They now get a larger piece of it.
Right.
And in the time since I founded Los Angeles Parking Freedom Initiative in November, there have been at least three class action lawsuits against the city of Los Angeles with regards to parking that sprung up completely independently of our effort. So what does that tell you?
The stars are aligning.
Yeah.
And I think the time has come. And you've got the mayor responding to you. Jay already has some credibility from the camera issue. And you're meeting with the mayor now. And I saw in the news he came out and he talked to the cameras. And it looks like it's just a matter of time, and maybe you don't know exactly how it's going to be reformed, but it will be reformed.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we've proposed a plan already, and that's in the process of being vetted through the working group on parking reform together with the city. And so there's going to be an outcome from that in about 4 months from now, roughly. And, you know, at that point, the city can either adopt it, you know, the city council can pass it into law, adopt it, and make it happen, or we can take it to a ballot initiative and get it passed that way.
Right. And then when you get enough signatures, the city will have another choice to pass it.
By the way, I don't really know, but something inside of me thinks this ruling that was just issued is a major thing. And specifically what I'm thinking about is if it's illegal and a judge has said it's illegal for this corporation to be making this decision, what does that say about all the tickets that were not reviewed properly?
And it's not the only thing that's going on that could potentially fall into that class of illegality.
Maybe there's a few zillion dollars owed to people.
Well, there's that.
Very well
yeah,
been.
There's that. And for example, right now we're dealing with numerous reports from people, probably those people that are going to be nodding their heads on the radio right now when they hear this, of receiving tickets via the mail rather than having them handed to you or put on your car. And this is allowed for in the state vehicle code only when a driver leaves the scene before the officer has a chance to put it on the car or hand it to the driver. But what they're doing is annotating a whole list of license plates and then later on mailing in the tickets.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah.
It's illegal.
Well, this is why I love you guys, because a lot of people would say, oh, what's the big deal?
Right.
And whether or
it's
not,
illegal.
That's the big deal.
Here's the thing. They'll come to you and say, what you did was illegal, so they got to follow the rules too.
Oh, I love you guys. We should share a summer home together and sit around.
Is it a nice place on the lake somewhere? Is it nice and cool?
Here's another one. We received documents from the city of San Diego's city attorney office, and they did research and basically came to the conclusion that it's essentially illegal for California cities to take money from parking meter revenue and put it in the general fund for general use, because that's basically taking a fee and turning it into a tax.
Okay. So that's illegal throughout California, or that's in L.A.?
Yeah, throughout California.
California.
Now, routinely, the city of Los Angeles takes that parking meter revenue. It goes into something called the Special Parking Revenue Fund, which is supposed to segregate that money and so that it's used for parking. But that's not what happens. They end up taking the money every single year and transfer it into the general fund. So the city attorney's office is right about their determination, that's illegal too.
Right. Yeah. All right. I got one for you. I bet you guys have never heard or considered this. The vehicle code, which supersedes any local law, says very clearly that every driver of every vehicle must obey the entire vehicle code at all times, except where it's explicitly said in the vehicle code that they're exempt or local authorities can make their own laws.
That's absolutely true.
Okay, so get this. The vehicle code says that it gives a list of exemptions that includes authorized emergency vehicles, police, fire, and so forth, are allowed to exemptions only when they're responding to an emergency. It doesn't say anything about them being allowed to violate the vehicle code when they're enforcing parking laws. That's not an emergency, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So don't they violate the law constantly? Isn't it their job description? They're impeding the flow of traffic. They're parking at red curbs. They're parking in front of fire hydrants.
Well, Steve and I are going to get out a ticket book, and we're going to start ticketing the parking enforcement officers.
Guess what? I tried to make a citizen's arrest one time of a parking enforcement cop in Beverly Hills.
And how did that work out?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. It was already a pet peeve of mine. This is when I was teaching traffic school, so I had a copy of the vehicle code in the car with me. So I'm driving down the street in Beverly Hills. It's whatever the street is that's one street south of Wilshire Boulevard around...
By Olympic.
Yeah, between Olympic and Wilshire near Beverly Drive around that neighborhood. And so I see there's an intersection and they all have red curbs. and there's four parking enforcement cops parked at the red curb. And there's plenty of legal spaces available. And the reason curbs are red at intersections is because it's not safe to park there because it blocks the vision when you're
And the Department of Transportation said exactly that to me yesterday in one of our meetings. Is, you know, red curb, oh, that's not a safe place to park. We have to ticket for that because it's not a safe place to park.
Yeah, okay. Right. So
they acknowledge that.
They always break the law all the time. But here I see four of them. Parked at all four of these red curbs. It was just too much for me. So I got out of the car and I let them have it. And I got a bad attitude in return. And and it annoyed me. So I said, well, you know, and I happen to know that you can make a citizen's arrest for any public offense. A lot of people think it's just for felonies, this, that, but it can be for anything. And there's no law that says you can't make a citizen's arrest of a cop. It might be dangerous, but you can do it. So I said, well, you know what? I'm going to make a citizen's arrest of you. You are right now under citizen's arrest. So they're like freaking out. One of them calls the police, you know, the kind that have guns, not the park enforcement ones. So a squad car comes out, and we get into this argument, and I'm showing him what the vehicle code says. It's right there. He didn't have much of an argument, but he just refused to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. So the next day, I go into the Beverly Hills police station, and I have a tape recorder hidden inside me. I wanted to record the conversation. And I was, you know, arranged for a meeting to complain about what happened. And they take me into some room, and I'm talking to them. And in the middle of it, they see, like, the little red record light that's inside just kind of barely showing through my pocket. So the cop goes, are you recording this conversation? And I really just said nothing. I was like a deer caught in the headlights. So basically, I got caught. And he took his like clipboard or something, and he slammed it on the table with such force that everybody in the station came running out, thinking like I was getting beaten up or something. And then they left me in the room for a while. And then I don't know, he was threatening to arrest me for some ridiculous thing.
It was a wiretapping law.
Yeah, sure. Something or other. Okay. And anyway, I got scared and just sort of got all apologetic and just got out of there. So that's my story.
It helps when you're going after the police for doing something illegally not to do something illegal yourself.
Except I don't think it is illegal. Well, I just got scared.
You actually, in terms of wiretapping law, if there's an expectation of privacy, you were in an enclosed space, you weren't out on the street or whatever.
Well, that's a gray area.
I think you can't record secretly.
Well, yeah, but it was the people. I understand what you're saying, but it's a little bit of a gray area.
So you're under citizen's arrest.
By you? Oh, my God. All right, so you guys have a long list of things that, I don't know how you find the time for all this. What are the priorities here? I see this whole parking reform. Well, first of all, let me ask you, because I was the one who brought up the unlawfulness. Are you guys also addressing the illegal behavior, or are you more focused on policy?
Well, we're taking a pretty much overall systemic look at the entire picture. And, you know, I guess the determinations that we came to in terms of what essentially has to change is that parking revenue needs to be separated from the general fund so that there's no longer basically an incentive to aggressively collect money from the public to plug up holes in the general budget. It needs to be segregated into a special fund that's used for parking and related purposes.
And to give some numbers on that, every year the Department of Transportation gets a budget number, and it's about $160 million, and it says you are expected to collect this much money in parking fines. And if they don't do it, they don't come close to that, they don't do it, they got a problem. So everything is informed by that, even all the way down to the officers on the street. You know, whether they decide to give somebody a break or don't, some will, some won't. But they all know that if they don't, in general, get $160 million in revenue, someone's going to be screaming at them. So this is part of the problem.
And the second thing that needs to change is that revenue generation orientation needs to be replaced by a public service orientation. That parking management needs to be viewed as a public service, you know, to businesses and residents and the general citizenry of the city. And those are that's the essential. Now, how do you make that happen institutionally? The nuts and bolts, the granular details of bringing that about and taking this dysfunctional system and replacing it with a functional parking management system. That's what we're digging into. And I think one of the reasons why Jay and I have gotten as far as we've gotten with this is that, yeah, there's a lot to complain about, and yeah, there's a lot of finger pointing that you could do, but we haven't really focused on the finger pointing or the complaining. We've been focused on, hey, what could we do to actually make this better and right. work better and, for the citizens, for the businesses, and for the city as well.
And for the parking officers. I mean, one yeah. of the things that we're discussing is the ability to give a warning ticket. Okay, now mm-hmm. the parking officers are out there, and they have to show that they're productive, whatever that means, that they're doing something. Otherwise, they come back with, you know, two tickets. They're going to be like, what have you been doing all day? So the parking officers feel this pressure to give tickets when they see something wrong. But if it's something that's kind of minor and they would just want to give a warning, how do they then prove that they've actually been productive? So we said if they can give a warning ticket, which just comes through their little handheld machine and all, and it goes into the system as a warning ticket, they can give a warning, but then they can also prove that they're being productive. And so this helps both sides of it. So, you know, I think it's a win-win for everybody concerned.
Okay, well, we're just about out of time, but one thing I want to mention is that, as I understand it, you guys, I won't say are threatening, but you've certainly made it known that one of the options here is that you're going to go for a ballot initiative if they don't change the policy without that.
Correct? Yeah, that was the initial idea. I mean, when I started it, I thought, well, there's just simply no way they're going to change any of this unless we just take it to a ballot initiative. So when I started the whole thing, I just said, we're going to a ballot initiative right off the top. That got some people's attention, apparently, and I think they'd rather not see that happen. So,
yeah, and they know that if it does go to a ballot initiative, it'll pass. I mean, there's no question.
Is about changing policy, and okay. I want you to know that I co-founded a PAC called the California Justice Committee, and we sued the California Secretary of State about ballot access, and we won. We had the ACLU represent us. And this is an issue that I think we would take up with you if you guys decide it's necessary. So just remember that.
Thank you.
We're going to win this.
Yes.
There's no question.
But there's one thing.
We do need everyone to join our website, parkinglosangeles.org. So everybody go there right now, parkinglosangeles.org.
And you can tell us your story. You can tell us your parking story.
That is a good URL because it's easy to remember. Now that we've bonded and I think we like each other, I hope that you'll allow me to say that I don't like the name Los Angeles Parking Freedom Initiative.
Okay.
I just think it's too long, too hard to remember.
What would you say? I don't know.
It could be any number of things.
Okay.
It's just something that's easy to remember.
It's an important issue.
Well, hold on. It's important.
Jeff, that's the first complaint I've ever gotten about the name.
Net neutrality.
You are the first one.
You know why net neutrality is going the way it is? It's because people didn't even know what it is. It's a terrible phrase. All right. Just think about it. Nobody wants to be told that. One of you probably came up with the name, right?
Hey, I'm pointing at Steven.
Never had a complaint before now.
All right. It could be just me, or it could be everybody else who's
it's
shy.
Just you.
Yeah. All right. He takes criticism well. I love you guys very much. Thank you so much. And on Facebook, you want to give your Facebook?
Facebook.com/parkinglosangeles.
See? You do know how to keep things simple.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. You want to show the Eric Garner video? And I don't know if Jessica's on the line. I hope she is. Okay, good. Thank you so much. We're going to talk about Eric Garner next. And you guys can towel down. It's pretty hot in here.
Thank you.
Okay.
Once again, police beating up on people.
Back up
right here.
Back up and get on that step.
Okay.
Back up.
All he did was break up a fight. And this is what happens for breaking up a fight.
All right, that's a portion of the video that has now been seen by about 38 billion people. It's quite the controversy in New York. although Stephen Vincent here in the studio is finding out about it for the first time. But that's okay. You're a busy guy.
No, I just knew it as the cigarette guy. I didn't know his name was Eric Garner.
Oh, okay. Well, I know it as Eric Garner. That's a good name for a black guy. So that was one of the racist things I saw on I think it was a cop website that he appropriated a white person's name or something. Anyway, it's a very interesting case. And on the phone now is Jessica Burke, who founded an organization called RID, which stands for Residents in Distress. Does that refer to indigestion, Jessica? Are you there, Jessica? Yeah, that's why I was asking if she's actually on the line. I don't hear her. Yeah, she was calling me here on my phone, so I thought that... Okay. All right, so we're going to try to get Jessica back on the line. And while we're doing that, you are familiar with the case.
Yeah, I've heard about it, you know.
Okay. I haven't heard of anything, you know, everything out there, too, so it's okay.
Well, you know, I mean, let's put it this way. I actually purposefully try to not know about most of what happens in the world.
Okay.
So when something, I do actually hear about it, it must be, you know, kind of big, you know. So I have heard chatter about a man being choked out and killed by cops because he was selling cigarettes in New York City.
Choke, yeah. Everybody's calling it a chokehold. And this has really elicited some strong feelings in me. I always try to be fair and look at both sides of it. And often I think people decide somebody is evil, and maybe they are in some respects, but they don't quite analyze the problem in the fairest way. And one of the things that I think people are jumping to prematurely is the conclusion that it was, in fact, a chokehold. Chokehold. Are you on the line now, Jessica?
I am on the line, Jeff.
All right, baby. Welcome. So let me just finish this thought. So a chokehold is just a word. By the way, Jessica, our parking enforcement guys from L.A. are sticking around for this. They just couldn't drag themselves away from this when they heard I was going to be talking to you about this.
I'm excited.
Good. So a chokehold is just a word, you know. Actually, what's prohibited, according to New York City's policy, is applying pressure to the windpipe. But putting one's arm around a neck is not automatically prohibited. So the video that we just showed, clearly the cop does have his arm around Eric Garner's neck. But I don't think it actually is clear that he's pressing on his windpipe, and so therefore it may not be an illegal chokehold. And what I think is the most important part of this case, and it's being ignored by almost everyone, is that there was no probable cause to arrest him to begin with. So it doesn't matter what kind of a tactic they used to restrain him. No tactic was legal because there was no probable cause, and nobody's even asking about it. All we have is a report that the police suspected him of selling cigarettes. But nobody is pressuring the police to say, well, who is the person that saw him selling cigarettes illegally? There's a million news stories out there, and not one of them mentions this. And this makes my head explode. What do you think, Jessica?
Well, I think, first of all, we don't want your head exploding. So let me step in and try to calm you down a little bit.
All right.
I agree mostly with what you said, except you seem overly focused on the probable cause, from my way of thinking. The police in New York City, especially in the last, shall we say, 10 years, pretty much do as they want. This happens time and time again. And the only reason we're all talking about this and all obsessed with it is because we have a video that shows a man dying and begging for help. Had a video not been made, this would have been just another death that the police would have gotten away with. So the chokehold itself, to me, actually, I agree, is the least important part. The behavior of the police doesn't change no matter what the subject matter. So it doesn't matter whether there was a crime or whether there wasn't a crime, because to approach a civilian who is clearly unarmed and escalate a situation from what could be a simple inquiry or asking for ID or whatever was going on. We don't know how it started, and have it wind up with someone dead and the Reverend Sharpton once again taking over our airways is unforgivable.
Well, I don't understand why you're telling me that I'm focusing too much on probable cause. You just said that this happens over and over again. To me, probable cause is everything. Probable cause is the thing that is supposed to prevent the police from hassling us just because they feel like it. And you and other people are saying this is exactly what goes on. So why am I too focused on it?
Because it's been proven time and time again, particularly to those of us who live in the city and experience it on a daily basis, that it's the police ignore the requirements for probable cause. We understand that.
So therefore I shouldn't scream about it? That's the reason to scream about it.
No. Please, I mean we are talking about this on the show, so I understand your need to want to get to the bottom of it. But my point is, would it make you happier if they had observed him committing a violation, selling cigarettes, and even if they had photographed it and they actually had him dead to rights on that? Would that make you happier? Never mind that he wound up dead because of a minor infraction?
Yeah, it would make me happy. I'm sitting here with two guys who just said very succinctly in the last segment that what matters is what's lawful. You can't be changing the law because of, you know, what seems, you know, what the vibes that you feel. If they have...
I see your point, but to me what matters is that someone was asking for help and that I believe the four ambulance attendants completely ignored him. And actually, what's more shocking and more relevant is not that the cop did something wrong, whether or not his hand was around the guy's windpipe or not, but that when the ambulance drivers, the EMT, arrived, they not only ignored him, but they provided him absolutely no medical attention. We here expect the police to act like schmucks. We don't usually see that from our EMTs. To me, this is the thrust of the story.
Well, I think that's outrageous too. And for Jay and Steven's benefit and our listeners who may not be familiar with all the details of this story, we should explain that after the so-called chokehold was administered, Garner became, you know, limp, was just lying on the sidewalk. And it took a while for paramedics to get there. And then when they did show up, there's a separate videotape of them milling about in a very leisurely fashion. And I agree with you that that is outrageous, but it's not as important to talk about for the simple reason that there's not too many people disagreeing about it. So far as I know, it's not a chronic problem. I'm not aware of paramedics not giving medical attention in general. These paramedics were suspended, and it's not an ongoing controversy like the problem with the police is on the street. So, you know,
that's why I'm so shocked by this behavior, because you're correct. I can't remember a time where a paramedic has behaved in this manner. And in fact, I don't think anyone could cite this. So what's shocking to me is the immediate response, really it's surprising, I shouldn't say shocking, of the police commissioner to actually identify it immediately as a chokehold before it was actually proven to be such. So it to me, I don't care whether or not a police officer took a knife and stabbed him in the back of the head. The question to me, I mean, I care. The question is, why would they approach an individual who doesn't seem to be, from the video, doesn't appear to be engaged in anything dangerous or violent, and then allow their behavior to escalate the situation to have somebody dead? The fact that I can appreciate everyone wants to find out what caused them to approach him in the first place, whether or not they had legitimate cause. But the police continuously have oodles and oodles of legitimate cause when they approach prostitutes and drug dealers.
Okay,
so
let's... Well, yeah, this is Stephen. Hey, and I really appreciate, you're educating us on this. I think I kind of have a little bit of an answer to that. And I think, you know, it goes a little bit further than Jeff's argument about probable cause to presumption of guilt. It's almost as if law enforcement, and we see the same kind of behavior essentially in parking enforcement, which is what we deal with.
And in traffic enforcement.
You're kind of just assumed to be guilty. Right.
Just assumed to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
And I think this may have also, not to completely cut you off, which I just did.
Well, basically, you're presumed to be guilty, if not of this particular instance, you're guilty of something. Therefore, you're deserving of treatment that is, paramount with a guilty person.
Right.
And this guy had a reputation, which, I assume it's true. I don't even know. But he is known as somebody who habitually sells cigarettes on the street.
Oh, my God.
And I think that's...
Oh, my God. He's known as somebody who sells cigarettes on the street?
Right. Yeah. I get your sarcasm. I think that's what happened.
Right.
He broke up a fight, apparently, and that's why the cops were on the scene. And so then they saw this guy who they know to be a guy who sells cigarettes illegally, and they hassled him. But I don't think he was doing it at that time.
Right. And I think that's part of the point of, of the relationship sometimes between the police and the public, which is they think of it as the civilians and the police. There's this wall. And to some extent, it may inform us as to what happened with the paramedics, which is once you got a guy down and the police are milling around, like, ooh, they got a bad guy down, as opposed to, oh, my God, there's a citizen that needs help. And that may have informed, what was going on in their minds of not rushing to it and whatnot. I don't know what was in their minds. They can explain.
I disagree. I can't disagree more strongly. I work very closely in this in New York City. I live in Greenwich Village and work as a community activist. And my experience with dozens of paramedics is that they are trained to respond to a person sick and ill. And I have seen them go over to the most disgusting criminal sorts and attempt to calm the patient. And even when the patient is in handcuffs, they are always treating the person's needs. They tend not to treat the person as a victim, as a criminal suspect. They treat him as an injured individual. And so I don't know what went on here, but it seems to me from what I've gleaned that they already knew he was dead. They may have been not doing their job correctly, but no one has said they were stupid. I think that there was no pulse, and therefore they knew there wasn't anything to be done. And instead of immediately attempting anyway to revive him, they all milled around, and some of them were laughing. So it's frightening that the officer that committed this act was I believe he was caught making a sarcastic comment about being photographed. So,
just to clarify, I thought Jay, you were talking about the police, not the paramedics.
I was talking about sort of both, where there is this sort of idea that someone's a bad guy or whatever, and they're afforded less courtesy than the general public would otherwise be. I don't know what was going on.
I agree with Jessica that the police may have that attitude, These paramedics are usually part of the fire department, and I think most...
Which is why I'm surprised is what goes on, so I'm just trying to...
Yeah, I think most of the people they see are very low-income people.
And I'm not even saying somebody they might encounter on the street. I'm saying when the police are milling around and, they got a bad guy there and they're kind of joking around with them and maybe, they're sort of seen on the same team, there may be some of that going on. I don't know who these people were or what was in their minds. I don't think anybody knows until they speak up and say what was in their minds.
Yeah, it may not be typical behavior.
Yeah.
Jessica, can you tell us a little bit about what your organization is, Residents in Distress?
Well, thank you, Jeff, for promoting that. RID, as it's known here, and we're infamous, particularly in the 6th Precinct in New York's Greenwich Village, originally was started to improve the quality of life, particularly in the West Village. But at the time that I started it, and it's about 10 years old, the quality of life in the city was just down the drain. And I began expanding RIT, and I would visit other precincts and meet with the commanders and community meetings to try to meet the needs of the community. So obviously, if it's 10 o'clock at night and an old person or a child can't feel safe going to the store for milk, we have a problem. What's known as quality of life crimes doesn't generally get a lot of attention because naturally the police are focusing their resources on, you know, violent crimes and felonies, bank robberies. But in our precinct, the 6th, there isn't a lot of violent crime, thank God. So the quality of life crimes, such as low-level street crime, muggings, or even, believe it or not, masturbation, public nudity, it's a big deal where we live, and the police tend not to do much about it. So our position has been to photograph and videotape the offender in the commission of the crime.
Do you have a website where we can see these images?
We publicize it as much as we can to try to clean up the condition.
You live in the West Village, right?
That's correct. I live on the famous, or rather, shall we say, infamous Christopher Street.
Now, you mentioned quality of life, and thank you for ignoring my childish joke there about watching those images on the internet. But you mentioned quality of life, and that's kind of at the heart of the controversy here is Bratton, who was the L.A. police commissioner or police chief. What was he called? The police chief or commissioner here?
Chief.
Chief. And I think he's called the commissioner there, is this big quality of life guy. You know, that's his policy is based on going after these.
Right, that was the broken windows theory, I believe, right?
Yeah. So it sounds like you, Jessica, have sort of a nuanced take on that. You think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you're kind of for it, but it depends on the particular neighborhood and what the crime level is.
No. What it really is, first of all, we detest it. When I say we, I mean every one of my ilk, so to speak, my fellow community activists. We just were rubbed the wrong way immediately by Bill Bratton. I just have no respect for him. I found him personally disgusting and such a sleazy character. So while his broken windows theory made sense technically, when Ray Kelly became police commissioner, it was much more palatable and he was a much more honorable individual and it was easier to take because he used compassion in dealing with the perps. He was also very, very clear to instruct the police to respect everyone. And so while we had a number of police officers all of a sudden doing their job, which they never had to do before, they also did it with extra charm and finesse so that it wasn't uncommon to see officers strolling up and down Christopher Street and basically patting these individuals on the back and saying, do me a favor, move along. You know, it's a nice night and this and that. And they were very smooth and they were not violent or angry. And actually the perps appreciated being treated with respect. And the goal was just to clear the street. We need to be able to walk down the street with our puppies and our children and our grandmothers. And we don't want to see people lounging around on our stoops and smoking pot. I mean, I don't mind looking at people smoking pot, but the community was beginning to really be overloaded with all of these individuals. And homeless hotels were cropping up on every corner. People were just screaming at all hours. And so if the police encounter resistance when they ask an individual to move, he or she may be involved in the most minor of offenses. But if they put up a struggle or the police perceive they're being resisted, then technically they are within their right to use whatever force necessary to subdue them.
If they had probable cause. If they had probable cause. If they don't have probable cause, then they're not within their rights. That's why probable cause is everything.
Well, but Jeff, here's the thing. The police don't need probable cause in order to talk to someone. They can approach anyone at any time.
That's true. But to make an arrest,
can I see your ID? They do not need probable cause.
That's some conversation. Hi, can I see your ID?
But they do that here all the time.
Can I see your ID if the police come up to you?
Yeah.
Unless they suspect you of something, I mean, they can talk to you all they want, but, you know, you're free to leave at any time unless they're detaining you and they have to have probable cause.
You are free. free to leave at any time, but I myself have been detained a number of times. They say to me, "Hi, Ms. Burke, what are you doing here?" And my answer is, "Why is that your business?" And pretty soon it deteriorates into, "Can I see your ID?" And I say, "Why do you need to see my ID? You know who I am." "Yes, but this and that, and when are you planning, how long are you planning to stay, or this and that," and it would deteriorate into...
Well, you're very chatty. You should go straight to, "Am I being detained? Am I being detained?" Cut the crap, Jessica. Get right to it. Cut to the chase.
3 days ago, I asked the lieutenant, "Why am I being detained?" He said, "I'm not detaining you. You're free to go." And then when I tried to open the door of the precinct, he put his foot in front of me. And I said, "Shall I jump over that?" And he said, "Go ahead. I'm not stopping you." And as I attempted to lift my foot to get out the door, I could clearly see that he was wanting to detain me. And I finally had to say to him, "Either back up or make an arrest. I mean, if they want to screw with you, they will." And apparently they definitely wanted to bother Mr. Garner that day, or they would not have treated him in that manner.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question just about sort of just your sense of what the mood is in the city now. I lived in New York for 10 years during the 80s, and one of the differences between New York and L.A. is that the tabloids are real big in New York, and everybody rides the train and reads the New York Post and the Daily News while they're on the train. And so when there's stories that get real big from time to time, they get really big. And it's like everywhere you go, everybody is talking about it. Here, not so much, I think, because there's no tabloids, not as many people ride the subways and so forth. So is this one of those stories now, Jessica, in New York, where it's like the thing that everybody's talking about and it's going to be going on for a while?
Well, Jeff, today, I had a busy day today as a brief aside. It was Professor Irwin Corey's 100th birthday party, and I had my mind on
the Queen of Non Sequiturs.
I could not have a conversation today that didn't include the death of Eric Garner. Everybody from the 80-year-old guy in the bakery to some man I met at the bus stop, that's all anybody wants to talk about, and that's all over. And
that's funny, because I want to talk about Professor Irwin Corey. I'm sorry we only have 2 minutes left. Did you talk to the professor about this or about anything?
The professor was, after eating cake and getting congratulations, wanted to talk about the Palestinians and indicated that the Hebrews, or the Hebes, were only on that land for a little while that it belonged to the Palestinians. Since he was speaking in the actor's temple, people were trying to shut him up. I thought that was admirable of him to still want to be controversial at his age.
So 100 years old, and is he in pretty good shape for 100 or what?
He is sharp as a tack. He needs help walking, but other than that, he knows he still can spot a pretty woman, and he's... You know, I understand he has a good appetite for everything. God bless him.
Great choice of words.
It was a wonderful turnout.
You guys know Professor Irwin Corey, right?
Oh, yeah. Not personally.
But. No, yeah. Well, I actually know him personally a little bit. We don't have enough time to tell it, but I have a great Professor Irwin Corey story. All right, Jessica, you are the sweeter than Tupelo honey, and if Van Morrison hasn't written a song about that already, he should.
Mr. Norman, thank you for having me on.
NormanReport.com is our website, and we're linking to your Facebook page, Jessica, the RID page, that is, and also to the Parking Initiative phase. Jessica, you've done some work in PR. What do you think of the name of their organization? Steven's looking at me like he's going to kill me. The name of their campaign is the Los Angeles Parking Freedom Initiative.
I'd say it needs a little bit of a touch-up, but
everybody's a critic.
Shorter. It's got to be easy to remember, right?
I think it needs to have a little bit. Yes, it has to have a, like RID. Immediately when it became RID,
spells a word.
Yeah.
All right, see what Professor Corey thinks.
I hate acronyms.
He's the world's
specifically picked the name so it couldn't be an acronym.
Exactly.
To each To each his own.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jessica. Take care. Thank you, Jane Stephen. Appreciate you sticking around for this segment, too. And we're at normanreport.com. Tune in next week every Tuesday night here on Skid Row Studios. This is Jeff Norman saying nighty night.
Jeff Norman, the Norman Report.